We got one phone, two phone, three phone, four phones, and a network attached storage device. All that and more this time on Before You Buy.
Netcasts you love
from people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Before You Buy is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This episode of Before You Buy is brought to you by Shutterstock.com. With over 28 million high-quality stock photos, illustrations, vectors, and video clips, Shutterstock helps you take your creative projects to the next level. For 25% off your new account, go to Shutterstock.com and use offer code BeforeYouBuy1013. Hey everybody, welcome to Before You Buy. This is Twit's product review show where we get in all sorts of cool gadgets and some not so cool gadgets.
Is that a flip phone?
Yeah, it might be a flip phone. Well, more on this later. Okay. So if you've never seen Before You Buy before, this is our product review show. We get in all sorts of different tech gadgets, laptops and cell phones, and even the really geeky stuff like network attached storage devices, and see what you guys think are buys, tries, and don't buys from the Twit team. So first off today, we have Radford's review of the Nokia Lumia 925. Let's go ahead and take it away with Radford.
Hi, I'm Radford Castro, and this is the review of the Nokia Lumia 925. The 925 is basically a cousin of the 920 series, which it shares space with the 928 and the 920 itself. The 925 comes in with T-Mobile being the exclusive carrier of this, but soon it'll be on AT&T. But for the most part, it's another Windows Phone 8 device, and I'd like to let you check it out. So the Nokia Lumia 925 actually is about weighs about 4.9 ounces. It has a pretty thin design, probably the thinnest of the Lumia lineup as we see it right now. It runs Windows Phone 8, as you can see, and its battery life is expected to have about 9 hours talk time, 18 days standby, and it has a Carl Zeiss camera at 8.7. The memory is about 1 gigabytes of RAM with 16 gigabytes of space, and you can do things like sync over Wi-Fi, USB, SkyDrive, 4G, it's capable, and of course you can do Wi-Fi calling. It's T-Mobile. So as you can see in the display, unlike the Lumia's 920 IPS LCD display, Nokia has kind of went for the AMOLED line, and the switches, you know, really helped them since basically at a 4.5-inch screen, it's using PureMotion HD, which is a fancy way of saying that it reduces latency on animation, so you can see that it's pretty smooth. And like the 920 before it, swiping around with the Windows Phone UI is fast and responsive, but that's part of why Windows Phone is Windows Phone. The interface really pops. Basically, what's best for your own preference really hasn't really changed that much, because Windows Phone hasn't really had this level of customization. But the big cool thing is that you can do color replication. The readability in sunlight was very good, and Nokia has included its usual high sensitivity options to enable glove use for less sunny days, and a glance option, which is enabled the first time with 925. And basically, it has this night mode where you can set a trigger at a certain time to turn the text red so it doesn't light up your bedroom. Launching the camera is the same way as you expect all Windows phones. You just tap the camera button and it goes right into camera mode. You can see your previous pictures by just swapping back and forth. These are actual pictures that I took. Some of this is in low light. So if you notice this, this is basically a shot of Leo's hats in his office with the lights off. And so PureView actually allows it to take shots in low light. The other cool thing too is that when you take a picture, on the lens there's actually six lenses inside, and actually is suspended inside, so that when you're moving around, there's not a lot of camera shake going on. It's actually pretty stable. Let me show you a little bit what that looks like. So this is me walking around outside of the studio, and it's actually, this video is running at 1080p, and I'm just kind of glancing around. You can see that as I'm walking around, video is pretty stable, and this is pretty much what it looks like. The Twit sign on 1080p. This particular phone actually uses a not a LED light, but something closer to a flash, which you'd expect from a real camera. So when you take a shot, it actually flashes. So it's pretty nice. The other thing to note, too, is that the downside of the camera is that it attracts some dust around the housing right over here. But for the most part, as long as you wipe it clean, you're not going to have too much problems. The next thing I want to make note of, too, is the battery. So right now we have 26% of battery left, and there's even a battery saver setting. It's estimated about 7 hours, but I ran this app called WP Bench, and I was able to achieve about 2 hours and 22 minutes, so there's definite battery improvements. Actually, 2 hours and 59 minutes. When I compared it to the 920, it was about 2 hours and 22 minutes, so there's definitely a battery improvement compared to the 920. But it works pretty well. During my time with it, I needed a charge at the end of it. The only thing that I have an issue with it is that when you plug this thing, it's plugged from the top. It doesn't plug from the bottom like most phones or on the side. It's plugged from the top, which is right next to your SIM card and next to your headphones. So if you're playing it in your car, might be kind of weird. Call quality is actually really nice, but it's expected for this type of phone. You don't hear a lot of the ambient noise, and of course the neighbor, or when I'm ever talking to my wife or a friend of mine, they don't hear the ambient noise coming from my end, especially if there are people in the background from talking out of the bar. So that's that. Before we get into the verdict, let's get into my pros and cons. The pro is that probably the most beautiful of all the Lumia lines in terms of, you know, thinness and polycarbonate design. It's a very cohesive look in terms of what Nokia is doing, and the cool thing about it is that this is the first time we've seen metal used this way. It's a very clean look. Also, the nice thing, too, of course, it's a very good camera and it shoots. It's nothing close to, of course, the 41 megapixel that we're seeing from the 1020, but it's pretty darn respectable in terms of shooting things in low light. The other cool thing is that it's running Windows Phone 8, so you don't really need to have the highest specs to do the greatest things you want to do on your phone. And the cool thing, too, is that it has very good battery life. That's cool. The cons is that you have a weird place where you plug it. You plug it from the top over here. And the batteries are not swappable, so you're kind of stuck with this battery. The third thing is that it doesn't have a micro SD card slot, so that's kind of a negative if you're planning on expanding the memory of your smartphone. And the con also is it's Windows Phone 8. So you're going to be a little bit behind in those apps. So if you're ingrained into Android and iOS, there's going to be some apps there that you might look forward to, but may not be there. So it depends on what you're using and how you're using it. But my verdict on this, it's a buy. At $30 from T-Mobile with a contract price, it's really hard to beat, especially with this type of camera. And Windows Phone is starting to catch up more with the apps. We're starting to see more third-party developers step up to cover the gaps like Instagram and stuff like that. But that's pretty much it. And this is the review of the Nokia Lumia 925. And Radford Castro, thanks for joining me.
Thank you so much, Radford. That was a really nice and detailed review. I really enjoyed it. But he actually has even more detail at our YouTube. You can go to youtube.com/beforeyoubuy and see all of the different reviews that we show on Before You Buy separated into their different segments. And even some of them are much longer, such as Radford's review. Now, I'm going to go ahead and continue on with our reviews. You may have noticed that I'm not Leo Laporte. I'm Shannon Morse, the producer of Before You Buy. And if you guys ever have a review that you or a product that you want to see us review, you can email me, shannon@twit.tv or byb@twit.tv as well. So we get tons of notifications and requests, and one of those is the one that Chad is going to be reviewing today. This one's been extremely popular lately. It just came out. This is the LG G2, correct?
Correct. So the LG G2 is LG's new top-of-the-line phone. Before we get started, I just want to point out, there's been a few bugs that I've had with this phone, and it looked like it was just exhibiting one of those. Oh,
bugs.
Now it's all working. Anyway, we'll get into that a little bit later. So the LG G2 is their top-of-the-line smartphone. There's a lot in this phone. It's running Android 2.2. 4.2.2. It has a really large display coming in at 5.2 inches.
It looks
and
gorgeous, too.
It is. And this is a 1080p display. So this is coming in at 423 ppi. So higher than retina resolution.
Wow.
There's a whole bunch of sensors. You got your normal proximity sensors, your gyroscopes, your accelerometers, that sort of stuff. And a whole bunch of different noise-canceling mics. You have one at the top, on the back, on the bottom. So it cancels noise pretty well. In terms of what is underneath, the horsepower has a quad-core CPU, which means that running games and things like that is absolutely nice. Using the phone, it's buttery smooth. It's really, really nice. Very, very fast in that department. It has, I believe, 2 gigs of RAM, and it is a 32 gigabyte storage for the phone. Now, the hardware on this phone is by far the selling point. It has every checkbox selected. This is an LCD display instead of a OLED. But where it falls short is definitely on the software side. Going to go back to the home launcher here. The home launcher has a lot of things automatically added, which you may or may not want, like weather, weather widget, things like that. You can see that I've actually kind of decided just to ignore the home launcher. I really didn't like the way that it transitions between pages. I didn't like a lot of the stuff that it did. I didn't like the app drawer over here on the side. I didn't like how they decided to display apps. So I went ahead and launched Nova Launcher, and that's how I decided to use my phone. So I went ahead and modified the phone. Next is something you use every day, which is notifications. This is your normal notifications pane, and you can see that you don't have not one, two, three, but 4 rows of crap that is incredibly hard to disable. Originally,
but you can get rid of it.
You can get rid of one row. You can get rid of QSlide here. I could not get rid of any of this. And I tried installing drop-down shade notification, a notification shade modification. It's a lot of words that all sound slightly similar. And they don't work as well as the stock notification shade. So I was really bummed that the stock notification shade has all of this cruft. One thing is this QSlide, which when I got the phone, either I did not realize what QSlide was or it was edited out. So if QSlide is gone, and we can go back, now that button is gone from this menu, so I can't get rid of QSlide. You would think that if you took it out of this first menu up here, it would just delete out of here. QSlide is sort of like a basic app tray. Another app tray in your notifications. But this is only for apps that they've approved. There's no way to add your own apps. This is only for apps that they have approved. And what they do, what they do is, let's say with calculator here, it's an app that hovers over. And once again, this is kind of why you need their approved apps. This is the calculator. You can do some things like adjust opacity. So let's say that you were in some sort of, you were texting with a friend and you wanted to use the calculator, but then move it out of the way and read the threaded conversation and then bring it back. You could do something like that. It has a whole bunch of other. Oh, and also just to point out, because I didn't know that this was a feature that I could get rid of for a long time because I had removed it from this area, let me just show you the dumbest thing in the world. You would think that if you removed all of these apps, so they're all gone, that tray would suck up and it's gone. But no, you're left with a gigantic edit button because it's still there. You'd think, if I remove all of these QSlide apps, I don't want any of them. Okay, let's make that thing go away. No, you still get this ginormous edit button that you cannot get rid of, which was a huge bummer. On top of that, I normally have a few programs running all the time that take up a notification, like BitTorrent Sync, Trillion, which is my chat service, and Audible. And if I have all of those enabled, I get a full page of stuff I cannot get rid of because of all of this taken up by LG's stuff. Now, of course, you can scroll up and get to your normal notifications. It has a few other things built in, so let's go ahead and load up a few apps. This is a way to save apps off to the side. If you use a three-finger swipe, you can save apps away off to the side. Let me do it with Maps as well. It's going to find me in Petaluma. That's our studio. And so I've saved it off to the side. And so if I want to, I can three-finger over, and I can see the apps that I have over here on the side. I could flick them away if I didn't want them. Or let's say I want to get back into my Twitter client, I could, and then I could get rid of it. Now, if you do that, if you pull them back and you say, you know what, I'm back in Maps, that's great, I'm going to go home, let's go back to Nova Launcher and bring it back. Well, Maps, Nova Launcher. You can see why something like this is incredibly annoying.
It can be irritating.
There's no reason for it. Did I get rid of? Apparently, I got rid of both. I got rid of them both somehow. It doesn't stay there. If you go back, it's gone. It's gone now. It feels like every single software interaction that they tried to add on top of the phone fell completely flat. Some of the other things you have, I need to kind of bring them back here. If I bring back QSlide, some of the other things that they have are. Actually, I do need that. I need to bring back Quick Memo.
Your hand looks great today.
Thanks. I need to bring back Quick Memo. They have some Quiet Mode, Quick Remote, those sort of things. These all come on the phone when you get them. So here's Quick Memo. What this does is it basically takes a screen grab of what you're looking at, and you can write on the screen. Let's say you don't want the screen behind it. You can drop down a little note, and you can write stuff on it. This all comes pre-installed. You could even do something like, let's say that you wanted to, you were like, okay, Mom, your email is this one right here. This is the email that you need, okay? Always use this for email. Don't use any of the other apps. You can actually offer this mode that allows it to place on top, and it's there. Now you can actually use the phone and it's still there. So
that's
cool. You could do that. It's kind of a neat feature, but it comes installed on the phone already. This isn't a feature that you can decide that you don't want.
So they have quite a bit of bloatware
A bit of bloatware. In fact, it was hard to count the amount of bloatware. If I go down into settings has changed. This is a heavily skinned version of Android 4.2.2. Settings, of course, look super different. You got your display set. You have the Samsung-esque smart screen features where if you're looking at the screen, it'll look at your eyeballs and see if it should keep the screen awake or not. You have that sort of stuff. But if I go into apps, you can see a lot. If I go over to all, there's a ton which I have disabled. You can see the little disabled thing next to them. This is featured apps, file manager, Facebook, device help, over here, city ID, clock widget,
yeah, so
all
lots.
Of these things, lots, AT&T locker, messages, navigator. I mean, there's so much bloatware on this phone, it is ridiculous. So, let's get into pros and cons. First, for the pros, this is definitely a fast phone. I really do like the quad-core GPU. On top of that, I really liked the screen. It was a really high resolution device, higher than Retina, and that definitely had me on board. And then finally is battery life. I found that there's a 3000 mAh battery in here, and I just loved it. I was never worried that I was going to run out of battery. In fact, sometimes I forgot to plug it in at night, and I managed to coax an entire extra day out
wow.
of the phone. I was definitely heavily turning down the screen and making sure that apps weren't running, but I managed to get 2 days out of the phone, so battery life is not an issue.
And that's with average use.
You can tell I've been using this as my sole phone for the past 2 weeks. So for the cons, any of the software that LG put onto this phone took away from the experience immensely. Everything from settings to the home launcher to even the unlocker. They've added the stupidest looking lock screen. Here's this bug that I keep running into. For some reason, it's not detecting all of my finger swipes at once. It seems like if the haptic has screwed it all up. Let me, sorry, I hit the, there's two settings buttons right next to each other, which drives me nuts. One, lock screen is under display, which makes no freaking sense. It should be under general and then under security, but it's under display. So if I change my lock screen away from pattern and turn it to, well, here, actually, one thing before I do that. Let me lock the phone, bring it up. They do have one feature that I really liked, which was guest mode. So if I use a pattern, which isn't my normal pattern, it will launch into guest mode, which has only a few apps, which is kind of a cool feature.
And so if you want to let somebody make a call.
Hey, I have the newest phone. Check it out. Here, I'll put it in guest mode. So now if I put it into swipe, and let's use particle as the default. And I'm also going to turn up. I don't know why I keep going home. I'm going to turn up the phone. But here's particle. Oh, it's so beautiful. Oh, my gosh. Let's also, let's instead of particle, let's do dewdrop. And this time I am going to turn up the phone. Yeah. Dewdrop is this. Here, I want you to listen to this sound, too. So it does that every single time you open the phone. Really, really some just horrible, horrible design choices. One thing that I do need to mention is that the volume rocker is not on the side like you would normally suspect. It's on the back of the phone. So you have a volume.
Yeah, so this is a big thing that they've been touting.
You have volume up and down, and this is your lock button. There's also an LED around it. So if you turn on your phone or you get a notification, this LED will light up. So you have a status LED on both sides, which is kind of nice. Do I like this feature? No, I don't care for it. Putting this here does not help in any way in any ergonomic situation. Many times I found myself putting my thumb on the front of the screen so that I would have enough leverage to unlock the phone, which just puts a big old fingerprint on the screen. I don't find that this is any more useful than something on the side. If for some reason you have... I mean, I don't even think that there's a disability cause for this. And also, many times I would try to search for it and smudge up my camera there. And so I'd go to take a photo and then have to unsmudge the camera and then take the photo. There is one thing that I do like, which is you can hold down the volume button and then it launches. I think if you're locked, if I lock the phone, you hold it down and then it launches into the camera app. And then you can also use any of the volume buttons to snap a photo.
Oh, that's nice.
In terms of photos, this is a 13 megapixel snapper on the back and a 2.2 megapixel snapper on the front. Great photos, absolutely love them. Especially with 13 megapixels, you could zoom in, crop. I was taking lots of video for vlogs. You can see eventually I got we were on the bay for the America's Cup. And you can see cats, you can see cheesesteak, you can see me, you can see...
The camera looks pretty good.
Yeah.
I'm not sure about low light, though.
So this was the best low light example that I have. We were in a bar, and there was enough light to capture the photo. Low light was not perfect. It is not something that can deal with the Lumia line of phones. We were really testing out. You can see it. Here's all the tests of low light, like jumping up the gain as much as possible.
Yeah, I believe we were testing this against Alex's phone.
Yeah, against Alex's phone. Alex's, he had a Lumia, I think it was the 1020. His phone totally bested my phone. But you could still, this was definitely very low light, and you could still get what you wanted. This was on the bay, we were on a ferry, and you can see that there's a pretty good amount of detail in this. This is, I think, an already cropped photo. Here's a full photo, and if I zoom in there, you can see all the little boats in there. I mean, this was pretty impressive, the 13 megapixel camera. It also has optical image stabilizers, so you get that as well. Sorry, I was in my cons.
You totally went to a tangent.
I did. I went into a big tangent before, but and then the back controls were my secondary con, was that I didn't really love this. It made me smudge the camera. It also has an LED flash.
So would you give it a buy, try, or a don't buy based on that?
This is a very hard decision because truly the hardware is phenomenal. The software makes this device the worst device ever. I would not suggest this to anyone who has a career, unless if your career happens to be in the pink section at the Walmart toys. Because it's just too cute, it's too fluffy, unless if you're going to modify...
I've heard that from more than one guy
heck out of this phone. Unless if you want to to change your launcher, change your lock screen, change your dropdown, change everything about this phone, and you are sophisticated enough to do all of those things, that's the only way that I would suggest this phone. So, on the top, buy, try, don't buy, this is a don't buy. The software just takes this phone to a level that is way below the standard level of flagship phones. Don't buy. If you are someone who can modify, who doesn't mind ROMing this phone or changing tons of settings, spending hours changing settings, which is what I had to do to get this to a usable state, then it is a try. But that is just about it for the review of the LG G2, and this is on AT&T.
Okay. I'm a little bit surprised that you gave it a don't buy first
and
a, off.
It's unfortunately LG's own fault because the software is so unusable, so bloated, so horrible, and unuser-friendly, just not needed.
I think when you have such nice hardware, it's always... True fact. I mean, just leave it stock Android. Just leave it stock. Don't put the bloatware on there, and you have something good there.
Yep. But if you want to buy this and root this phone and put a clean mod on it, I'd so suggest it. Because hardware is... The glass is Gorilla Glass 2. It's not Gorilla Glass 3. It's Gorilla Glass 2. And it's nicely kind of chamfered on the edges. Feels great in the hand.
Yeah.
The back is
it's a little bit.
It's
lightweight.
It's lightweight. It's thin. Yeah. The back. It's a little bit of fingerprinting. You might want to see the fingerprints on the back. You can definitely tell the plastic back has lots of fingerprints. But other than that, here you go.
Let's see.
It's the weight. It's five ounces.
Yeah, I can feel a big difference between my phone and your phone, which I'll get to this one in just a second. Thank you, Chad, so much.
Of course.
Where can people find you?
People can check out my personal YouTube channel at youtube.com/omgchad. I do Before You Buy, I do This Week in YouTube, which is twit.tv/twiyt, and OMG Craft, so twit.tv/omgcraft, which is a Minecraft show.
Yay! It's very fun. Actually, one of my little cousins watches it.
Oh, good.
Yeah, it's so cute. Good. I introduced him to it, and
awesome.
He loves it. Yeah,
awesome.
He's
Thank you.
9 years old, so don't curse on that show, okay?
I won't. It'll always be family friendly.
Thank you so much, Chad. That was an excellent review. I appreciate it.
Thanks.
So we're going to go ahead and move on to our third review. This one is from Russell Tammany. He is our local IT expert. He comes in all the time and helps us out, well, whenever the wireless dies or whatnot. And he has a network-attached storage device for us. He actually does a lot of photography himself, so this is very useful for photographers. Let's check it out.
Hi, this is Russell Tammany for Before You Buy, and today I'll be reviewing the Synology DiskStation 1513 Plus. This Synology NAS is a 5-drive bay NAS that allows you to put up to 5 drives in the front of it, and there's also some expansion abilities to allow you to add storage later. This Synology NAS is powered by an Intel Atom processor and has 2 gigabytes of RAM, so you can actually put quite a bit of applications and server purposes for it. You can use these devices for home or small business, and they have quite a bit of features and functionality that might be useful to you. Okay, so this is the basic box. You've got the Synology box with 5 hot swap drive bays. So each of these have little locking connectors on them so that once you install a drive, they can be locked. And they also have green status lights that let you know that it's working. This unit has 4 LAN ports, so it can be used with link aggregation to get faster performance. So on the front of the unit, it'll tell you its status, whether there's an alert, and what the status is of the LAN ports. Then in the rear of the unit, you have quite a bit of functionality in the back of this unit. So this unit has 2 eSATA expansion ports, which can be used with regular eSATA drives or Synology's expansion bays. You've also got 2 USB 3.0 ports and 4 USB 2.0 ports. You've also got 4 gigabit Ethernet adapters, and that can be used either in a high availability cluster with other Synology units, or you can actually use it with link aggregation to get faster performance. Once you've turned it on and connected it to the network, you're going to be able to get into what they call the Disk Station Manager software. And this DSM software is what makes these Synology units really great. The first time you log into the Synology Disk Station, you'll just log in as admin, and then it'll take you into their Disk Station operating system. Now, this isn't the first time that I've logged in, so the Quick Start Wizard doesn't come up. What you'll get with the Quick Start Wizard is something that comes up, tells you what hard drives are in the system, and allows you to create a RAID or a Synology hybrid RAID of those disks for use. So what I've gone in here is we've loaded this up with 5 of the Western Digital 2 terabyte drives. And so we've got them all in here, and they're all created into this Synology hybrid RAID. So this means that we've got a 7.2 terabyte file system available for our use. Now, with the Synology units, they use regular Linux ext4, so the recovery and kind of disaster failure, if like you had to hook these drives to another system, you can actually hook them to a Linux system and get them mounted. The Synology Hybrid RAID is a little bit harder to get mounted in another system, but the regular Linux RAID 5 and RAID 1 modes are just what you would find in any Linux server. So once you've created your volume on the Synology unit, there's a lot of options that you have. And it can be a little bit daunting, but you might already have an idea of what you want to use your Synology disk station for. One of the biggest uses is to use it as a file store. So you'll actually have the ability to go into the control panel and then create multiple shared folders. What makes the Synology stuff pretty unique is their interface here for creating and managing everything. And so everything's sort of laid out in the control panel where it's real clear. You can link it up with your router. You can set a dynamic DNS so that if you need to get into the unit from outside, it will take your dynamic IP address and publish it to a name. If you have certain UPnP routers, it can automatically configure those port forwardings for you. It's got built-in quality of service and firewalls, and everything's really laid out in a very nice form factor. If you're a business user, you can go into directory service and join it to your Active Directory domain, and then you can use your Active Directory users and groups for all of the permissions and login to the system. So the Synology disk station comes with a certain set of built-in applications. So in the control panel, you'll find that ability to set up your FTP, to set up a web server, and to set up other items like that. However, the Package Center also lets you add special features to your disk station. And so these are little one-click items where if you want to use the Cloud Station software, which is a great Dropbox-like feature, so this will give you a local personal Dropbox for multiple users off of one system. And all you have to do is click on Install, and you've got your Cloud Station icon. You click on your Cloud Station icon, and it'll come up with the Cloud Station setup. And everything is really simple and straightforward, and you can set these up in a couple of minutes. You have a lot of other options available in the package station, and all of these have been tested and certified by Synology to work on the unit. There's options that are more business-oriented, like a directory service, or home-oriented, like the Plex Media Server. The whole system is run underneath Linux, so you can SSH into them and compile packages. You can do custom scripts and other custom settings. However, the best thing about these is that you don't need to do any of that. And for the simple user that, you know, might want to set up a basic Linux file server, this is going to give you so much more control and so much more usability than what you'll be able to kind of cobble together with other products. So there's many reasons that you might want a NAS device, and I think the Synology DS1513 is a great choice. The pros are that it's fast and reliable. I've used these for a couple years now, and every time I put them in, I basically never have to touch them again. It's also it's got great business and home features, especially for a small business or like a power home user that is maybe a photographer or artist or musician, where you've got a lot of information. It's important to back it up. The cons are just really, you know, I had to think pretty hard about the cons because I'm really happy with these devices. And the cons are that the expansion bays are pretty expensive, considering that they don't actually have anything really in them except for a power supply for the drives and eSATA expansion bays. It's lacking native two-way replication, which most people don't need, but for small businesses that have multiple sites and small offices, it's nice to have one unit in one location, a unit in another location, and then have a folder that's set up so that it's two-way sync between the offices. And the interface, I really like the interface. It's great and simple, but once you really start loading it down and using it like a power user, it'll get a little bit cluttered, and you're sort of navigating through the icons on the desktop and going through the control panel and going through all the tabs and clicking on little buttons on the tabs, and you sort of have to dig around and bury around for some of the more advanced features. So overall, I'm going to give the Synology DS1513 Plus a buy. They're $835 on Amazon right now, which might seem a little bit expensive, but compared to what else is out there in the market, compared to like a small server or trying to build together your own system and put the drives in it, you can do it a little cheaper, but you're not going to have the features of the hot swap bays, the Synology DSM software, the monitoring, the alerts, just all the great things that you get out of these devices. And I think it's definitely worth it. This has been Russell Tammany for Before You Buy, reviewing the Synology DS1513.
Yay! It's a buy! I personally really like that NAS, and I kind of want to buy one myself, even though it's a little expensive for me, and I totally can't afford it right now, but I totally want one. Thank you, Russell. That was an excellent review, and you can find Russell doing more reviews over here at twit.tv/BYB. Now, I would like to thank our advertiser this week, our sponsor. Thank you so much for sponsoring this episode of Before You Buy, Shutterstock.com. Now, if you've never checked out Shutterstock.com, this is the perfect website to find images, videos, anything you need for your creative sources, your creative project. Whether it's a website or if you're doing a publication, an advertisement even, or you're making a really cool video and you want to share it with all your friends, you can choose over 28 million high-quality stock photos, illustrations, even vectors, and video clips. They source images from around the world. They put them right there at your fingertips. And the contributors to Shutterstock are actually professional photographers and artists. They review each image individually for content and quality before adding it to its library. Now, Shutterstock adds 20,000 images a day. So every time you visit, you're going to find something new. You're not going to get bored of this site. And they also have flexible pricing. You can choose individual image packs or a monthly subscription for the best deal. You can download 25 images a day with just the standard subscription. And you can also download any image, any file size, and pay only one price. So they're not going to upcharge you for the largest image size or the largest vector. Now, Shutterstock gives you the images you need to bring your creative projects to the next level, and they also make it very easy. They have really sophisticated search tools, so you can search and drill down by subject, color, file type, gender, even emotion, and tons more. They also have shareable light boxes, so you can save images to a light gallery and then access them anytime and share them with your other team members or whoever you want. And there's a really nice award-winning iPad app. I know Leo has mentioned this before. You can search on the go, and you can use it to display images during presentations. Extremely useful. Now, they have a global marketplace. They have a multilingual customer service in more than a dozen international countries and full-time customer support throughout the week, too. Now, I asked Brian, what can we share today? And you know what? I really want to make a video about a dancing dog. So I'm going to search for, you know, dog videos on here. Some cute little doggies. So we got some adorable images of dogs. There's a little dog in a dog park. There's a live video of a dog and two children playing with their doggy. Aren't they cute? And you can play any kind of doggies that you want to use. So here, this one's my favorite dog. So I would love to have this dog in the studio every day, but I'm pretty sure Ozzy would totally kill him. But he's so cute. He's so adorable. And it comes on a green screen, so you can put him on your in your project.
You can put him anywhere. Yeah. He's the mobilest dog you've ever seen.
I would just put the little dancing dog right next to me because he's so adorable.
That's so cute.
I could just pet the little dog while I do all my video shows. He's so cute. And now I want to have videos of dancing dogs and cats in every single episode that we do. A new show this week in Dancing Animals.
Look
at the little doggy.
Before
You go, good boy. Yeah, good boy. There he goes. He's so cute, isn't he?
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, wait. I should pet him like this.
There he goes. Woo! Ah! Yeah. Oh, yeah. Shutterstock.com. Woo!
He's so excited about Shutterstock.com, and you should be, too. You can try Shutterstock today by signing up for a free account. Just start an account and begin using Shutterstock to help imagine what your next project could be like and save favorite images to a lightbox to review later. Now, once you decide to purchase, use the offer code BEFOREYOUBUY1013, that's all one word, and new accounts will receive 25% off any package. That's a great deal. That's Shutterstock.com, and for 25% off new accounts, use offer code BEFOREYOUBUY1013. And we would like to thank Shutterstock for their support of Before You Buy. Oh, look at that one with the little movie theater. I wonder if there's a movie theater here that will let you bring dogs into town. That would be so fun.
Question.
Take them into the movie theater with you.
He barks at the other
Feed
dogs
them popcorn.
The yes.
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 And soda.
Yes.
And maybe some beer.
Yep.
Or not. No, I'm just kidding.
Doggy treats.
He's so cute. Yes. Thank you again, Shutterstock.com. Now, we are going to move on. We have two more reviews for you today. This one is from 2003. I'm just kidding. Tony, take it away.
I'm Tony for Twitter TV, and Before You Buy, and today I'm reviewing the Kyocera Kona flip phone. Now, the first flip phone was introduced by Motorola back in 1996 with the StarTech. And the first flip phone with a camera was introduced by Sanyo back in 2002. Now, not much has changed since 2002. Form factor is still the same. You got the display on top and the keyboard on the bottom, and you got the camera on the back. The Kona is running a special Brew OS paired with a Qualcomm chipset, running 256 megabytes of ROM and 128 RAM. You got dual display, you got a 1.44 inch TFT and a 2.4 inch TFT QVGA on the inside, and that's actually 320 by 240 DPI. You can get this phone either on Sprint or Virgin Mobile, and it's only got 3G, so no 4G LTE or 4G support for Sprint or Virgin. The camera is a 2-megapixel back-facing camera with no front-facing camera, unfortunately. And with your slow 3G connection, you can do WAP web browsing, but you do get great, great battery life, 6-hour talk time, 29.17 days of standby, and I can contest to that. I did about half of that with 50% of battery life left. Call quality is as you would expect on Sprint network. Clear when you have a good connection. Not so clear when you don't have a good connection. Pro, very affordable. You can get this phone with or without contract, depending on how much you want to pay upfront. 2-megapixel camera, the competition in this category on Sprint does not have a camera. So having a 2-megapixel camera is pretty awesome. Buy, try, or don't buy, this is gonna be a buy for the Kona. Not only do I love coffee, I also love the crazy battery life on this phone. I know you can't do much multitasking with this, but if you need a phone to talk on one of the nation's biggest network, Kona is your cup of coffee. I'm Tony for Twitter.tv, and before you buy, and this is a Kyocera Kona. Hold on, I gotta take this.
Hello? Tony? Yes, I can hear you now. Yeah? Your audio sounds terrible. I'm not really sure what's wrong with you right now, but it doesn't sound that great. Yeah. Yeah. Do it again. Yeah. Because you listen to me. No.
Which phone are you using, the Kona or
which
the other one?
So we totally did that video back in 2003.
Uh-huh. And we just found the archives.
We just found the archives. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah. So yeah. This is a new phone, surprisingly. It is a new phone. But honestly, to be completely honest, my mom still uses a black and white flip phone from 2000, I believe, or something like that. Maybe it was 2003.
This is the opposite of a retina display.
It was around that time. And it's a black and white. It doesn't even take color pictures. It's terrible. And this would be an excellent choice for her if she wanted to upgrade, because she does not want to go smartphone at all. Ka-chook, ka-chook.
There we go. Save forever.
It is a great phone. So go ahead and move on to mine. Thank you again, Tony Wang. You can find Tony at twit.tv as well. He's always behind the scenes making sure everything runs smoothly with the editing. So I'm going to be reviewing the Cellular One by... No, I'm just kidding. I'm not going to review this. I would like to, though. That would be really fun. Get out of my camera.
Sorry.
Are you taking my space?
It has a screen on the back, but it doesn't allow you to see what's on your own... Like, thing.
What?
Like, I want to see myself while I'm taking a selfie.
You're such a ham.
Sorry.
All right. Well, today I also have a phone for you. This one's a little bit different from the other ones we have checked out today. Mm-hmm. This is the LG Enact. It's on Verizon. You can get this for $19.99 with a 2-year contract. An extremely well-priced
$19.99, $20.
$19.99, yeah, it's very nice.
Physical keyboard.
So I want to give you a quick comparison. You can also find another QWERTY keyboard phone on Verizon for free, the Droid 4, which is a little bit older. This one just released around August, September time. So this one is very new. The Droid 4 is a little bit older, but it has I would say, better specs than this phone. So that might be a better option for you since it's free compared to this one, which is $19.99. So this one has, it's 4.37 inches tall, and it's 2.06 inches wide. Also, it's thick because it does have that pull-out keyboard. Mm-hmm. So it's a little bit less than an inch. It's 0.62 inches from, you know, top to bottom. Also, it's 6 ounces. It's actually heavier than the LG G2 that you reviewed. Yeah, at 5 ounces. Yours is just a little bit less than this one in weight. So it does feel rather bulky when you have this in your pocket, or, you know, when you're just have it in your hand. It is, it's definitely
a thick phone. Yeah, it has heft and weight. Yeah.
Exactly. Now, one thing that bothered me about this was when I'm pulling up apps or when I'm doing, you know, just flipping through things on here, it is rather slow. Unfortunately, the CPU is really, really laggy in this thing. It's a 1.2 gigahertz CPU. So, ooh, you know, you'd think it'd be all right, but I did notice some definite lag when I was just, you know, popping around on it and playing with it. That's a definite unfortunate piece of it. There is a camera on the back, which you can access either way. So it's always there. And that is 5 megapixels. I noticed when I was taking some photos with this, I'll go into my camera app. When you choose a low light setting, so I took a picture back here where it's not lit very well, the photo is extremely blurry. Also, it doesn't flip when you turn it to its side, and that drives me crazy.
Accelerometer may not be included. We have not confirmed.
Drives me crazy. Yeah, it's such a pain. So it's very fuzzy, and that's unfortunate about it. But with a 5 megapixel camera, of course, that's going to be something that you run into. This is a lit picture. It's right there in our studio, but there's quite a bit of glare
and noise.
Yeah, there's lots of noise, and this is a picture of you. You're extremely blown out. That's a great picture of you.
Yeah, it looks like I'm wearing a prosthetic mask of myself.
It is so blown out. Yeah, so the camera on this is not really good at all. It's very unfortunate. Although one thing that's nice about it is the battery, which you can access, so you can replace it if you want to. It's a 2460 mAh battery, mm-hmm. So it's a decent size for this phone. You can get well over 11 hours of active use on it. Like if you're playing videos, you can get, you know, ooh, I was able to do like 13 hours on it.
I see the SD card slot, which my phone lacks. I do not have an
SD. So this is nice because you can get up to 64 gigs of expandable storage on there. And then you also have the little SIM card slot right there.
Perfect.
For your Verizon phone. Now, if I slap this back on here, it's also very easy to take off and put back on. You'll notice it is 4G LTE, which is wonderful. I don't even think they sell phones that aren't 4G LTE anymore.
Yeah, Verizon loves to push that.
Yeah, you can. There is a flash on the back, and it also has this, it's kind of a nice rubber texturized one. You can listen to me scratching it. It sounds kind of like
it's
I'm trying to DJ.
It's very plasticky. It's not even
very plasticky.
Trying to be faux plastic. It's plastic.
It's very plasticky, it's but I do like that it is texturized like that because it's not. You're not going to drop the phone at all. Yeah. So you can kind of see it when I tilt it into the light like that. Also, with the specs, you get a headphone jack on the top, of course. You get your volume sliders right there. You get a micro USB for charging right there. It took me a moment to find that.
Yeah, that's a nice.
Down there is just where you stick your thumb to pull out the battery or whatnot. And then on the side, you also have your power button over here. Nice and pretty. Now, the audio, you might be wondering, where the heck is the speaker? It's down here in the corner. Now, I noticed when I'm playing some videos, for example, let me unlock that, I also get those dumb little icons that LG likes to add.
Oh, God, I hate those.
Yeah, like the dewdrop and the terrible menu and whatnot.
Yeah,
mine isn't as bad, but yeah, when I stick notifications down here, it's definitely a big cluster over here.
And you still have the Q slide, so you can hit the calendar there and get the floaty apps.
Yeah, exactly. So if I pull up, let's go apps and YouTube. So I'm going to play a video for you so you can see what it looks like on the video. And I will just use this later. I'm going to pull up an episode of Twit so we don't get a takedown.
Oh, nice.
Because that's always nice. All right. And we will pull this up. Okay, so here's an inside Twit from like a year ago or so. Oh, 2-year anniversary of the Brick House. That's not that old. Okay. So there's the volume.
It's pretty good.
Pretty good. Unfortunately, though, the way I hold it, since I'm left-handed, I cover it up.
Oh, it's gone. I don't hear anything.
It's completely gone. Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny. I sort of had that same issue with this phone that it pointed
out
the back.
It's completely gone.
And if you watch it in portrait, you always throw your thing right there. LG has two issues. They're really great on battery life.
Really
bad on speakers and crapware on their devices.
It's like, no! Now, I know you're probably wondering about the screen, too. You know, what kind of resolution is it? It is 800 by 400 pixel.
Oh,
it's very low resolution. You can't really tell on the camera, but...
That VGA quality,
yeah,
less than if you're
when
on the 400.
When you hold it up to yourself or you're viewing photos on here and videos, you can definitely tell. Also, this is almost as bright as it can get. If I brighten it up a little bit, it does get pretty bright, I will say. Now, that's on full brightness. Mm-hmm. So if I go back... Yeah, you can definitely tell when I put it straight forward, it gets a little bit blown out on the camera, and that's because it does get rather bright. So it's nice and bright, but unfortunately, the pixel resolution on it is very, very low. Mm-hmm. And it does come with 4.1.2 Jelly Bean, too, so it's a little bit outdated, just slightly. So I'll go ahead and give you my pros and cons for this. With my pros, it is very inexpensive, so it's definitely a good choice if you are... on a budget, although the Droid 4 is free, so mm-hmm. So I would just say try both of them before you pick one, because you might like this one more than the Droid 4, but that one also has a QWERTY keyboard. The QWERTY keyboard is really nice to use. It's very, very easy to type on it. I kind of miss this.
Yeah.
When I start messing with a QWERTY keyboard on my phone, I'm like, oh man, it feels good to have something nice and textured and tough that I can actually, you know, type out something really fast. And it gives you some kind of easy memorization, because it does have a couple of little bullets on the F and the J right there. So it's very easy to find, like, your home row.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's pretty. I like it. Now, my other pro was the QWERTY keyboard. Now, my cons on this, slow processing speed, definitely feel a lag in it, and the camera. The camera is so bad.
Yeah.
And, of course, the display.
And even as a front-facing camera, I bet that is even worse.
Yeah, it's terrible. So if I was to give this a buy, try, or a don't buy, I would say don't buy, mostly because it's $20 more than the Droid 4. Although it is brand new, I think the Droid 4 would probably be a better choice, and you're still going to get the nice 4G LTE since that's on Verizon. So... don't buy for the LG Enact on Verizon.
They gotta love that name, the Enact.
Enact.
It means that you're just gonna do stuff all the time with
Enact.
It.
Enact.
You're gonna enact
you're
your
like Batman.
Your phone calls, enact your your calendar appointments.
Thank you again, Chad, for chilling with me today and reviewing
Absolutely.
Your product. I
Thank
really
you.
Appreciate it. Also, we had Tony Wang, Russell Tammany. Who
Radford.
Else did we have today? Radford, yes. Radford Castro, who is currently on vacation, and I'm totally jealous of him. Man, he's probably, like, getting a tan or something. I'm so jealous. Anyway, you can find all of our reviews over at youtube.com/beforeyoubuy. You can email me anytime you want to find out what, so I can find out what you want us to review. I'm shannon@twit.tv. You can also reach me byb@twit.tv, and let me know what you think of today's show. That about covers it for today's episode of Before You Buy, and always remember... you gotta watch
before you buy.